our story series, which means you get to hear about how God is impacting, affecting, has affected people's lives in our immediate Watermark family and in our extended family. Like, we had the missionaries last week, people that are going out and sharing the gospel. The story last week, you know, she's working at a news station, the job of her dreams. He's working security, and now these two people are missionaries. Like, how, you can't make this stuff up, okay? So it's cool to hear what God is doing and is continuing doing in people's lives. They're heading to Lebanon now, which we have some close friends that were missionaries there. So huge heart for that. And if you haven't been paying attention, you would just see how ridiculously great God is in people's lives. And yeah, you get to hear my story now. One thing I want to say is that you get to hear these stories. You hear the stories last week, you hear Don and Kayla's story. The fun thing about it is that God isn't done. Like, this is just a part of the story, and that story continues. God, I bet you Don and Kayla shared today, they would have something a little bit different that God has done in their life. And that is the beauty of our life. And I do feel like some people need to hear this, is like, with our story and who you are and what you are, God does not get tired of you, okay? So I just want you to digest that a little. God does not get sick of dealing with your issues. He doesn't get sick of, you know, you breaking down and doing stupid stuff like I've done over and over again. God does not get tired of you, no matter where you're at. So please believe that. And yeah, he has so much invested in each one of you, each one of us. You are God's innovation. You're one of his innovations. And like all things that are created, they sometimes, they get broken. They break a little bit. But what does God do? He's the ultimate fixer. So if anything, he wants to fix you today if you're broken. So I say this all to segue into a story about a kid who's, I've been through some things, broken, needed fixing, my story. So, yeah, this is back here. You can see me. I'm at the bottom. My mom, Diane, on the left. My brother on the right is Michael. And then me, Benjamin, Jeffrey Myatt, born 1987, Sacramento, California. You can go to the next pick. There's me, Santa Claus. It's my best friend, Kyle. We're still best friends this day. We've been best friends since we were 1 year old. That's my grandpa, Maurice. A lot of you guys know I'm having a baby. My baby's middle name is going to have a middle name, Maurice, after my grandfather. So he passed away when I was about 13 years old. So we were really close. And then the next picture. So my brother, he's 9 years older than me. That's a good way of kind of show the difference there. So, can't. Oh, my eyes. I'm always squinting, all right? I'm always squinting. Lights don't do good with me. The sun, I did, apparently don't like the sun. Me and my brother have different dads. My brother was born in Hawaii. I was born in California. Like I said, different dads. So, yeah, just, and he's much older than me. So, obviously, the dynamic there, if you guys have older siblings, you kind of know. There's a level to the, some people are really close. My brother, just with the for a long time, we're closer now today than we have been when I was younger. But of course, he always loved me. When we were in California, we moved to Brainerd, Minnesota. So my mom chose to be a single mom. My dad was a drug dealer and was into a lot of stuff. And she knew that she had to leave if I would have a chance at any type of success. And my brother. My brother's older. My brother knew my dad. It's crazy. My brother knew my dad, and I've never met him before. But my mom left because she knew that I had to be in a better environment. And we ended up moving to my grandparents. Brainerd, Minnesota. California to Brainerd, Minnesota. Rural, you know, 10,000 people. The household was crazy. Like, we would, like, I had, so me, my mom, my brother were there, my grandma, grandpa, my uncle was there. At one point, my aunt and uncle and their two kids moved in. And then my uncle and his wife, we had 10 people living in a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house. Tiny, lot of conflict, even amongst adults. Like, it was, yeah, I remember there being a lot of things going on, very busy. I remember not being able to ever use the bathroom. Like, I just go outside, you know, it's like in the neighborhood. Like, I didn't even care. It's like, I'm not waiting for mom to do her hair and get out of the bathroom. So that's just kind of how that was. But then when I was 6 years old, my mom was a nurse growing up. So from when I was born to 6 years old, she worked nights. So my grandparents took care of me during the time when my mom was sleeping. And my mom started a new job. She started taking care of people with mental disabilities and physical disabilities. So we had people move into our house. So we bought a little tiny house 5 blocks from my grandma's. And then we had 4 adults move in that had different disabilities. So that house was also really interesting, right? You learn a lot of things. Like, obviously, people and with people seeing people with disabilities, it sometimes is a barrier between people. Being so young and growing up in that, like, there's some of my favorite people. Like, I would go to their dances. So a lot of them work. They're higher functioning, so they'd work, and then they'd have all these work parties, and I'd go to their work parties and hang out with them, and I'd bring my friends with, and it was a great time. I still was at my grandparents' house. They were so close. I'd go over there all the time because my grandma made some mean dessert. My grandma always had dessert. Didn't matter what day it was, and if she didn't have anything made, we'd eat ice cream and like canned peaches, and we'd put a bunch of whipped cream on it. It was still good. So I remember loving my grandparents and being there all the time. I grew up in church. From the moment I remember, I was in church all the time. It was a common place. I remember staying at people's house because our church was a little bit away. So I remember staying the night at people's houses if there's like a big event going on and stuff like that. So always in church. And then just when it comes to church, like I was always like connected to music. I saw music, wanted to be a part of it. I started out with drums. Like, love playing drums, love anything with the beats. That led me to dancing. Love to dance and to sing. So I was always in choir. I was always singing with other people around. I was kind of nervous to sing by myself if you ever put me on the spot. Obviously, that's changed a little bit now. But yeah, it's just cool. Always loved music. And I was always, even when I wasn't playing, I'd be off in the corner, and our church had little like musical instruments. So I'd be sitting on the floor, like pretending like I was playing the drums or something. So I loved doing that. So now, just kind of to fast forward a little bit, just to when I started paying attention to things around me a little bit. Growing up, it was always hard to feel like I belonged. So being a biracial kid in a primarily all-white community, like, there wasn't a lot of people, and if there were, we found each other. I remember like when I'd go to like a sporting event or I started playing basketball and I saw a kid that looked anywhere like me, I was like so excited. I'm like, dude, let's like be best friends, please. Like, do you get all these weird questions? Like, so I mean, being like that, even my mom, like, my mom's grew up in Brainerd, Minnesota, moved to California. She was adventurous, went to Hawaii, all that stuff. But when you come back, my mom never knew how to mess with this hair. She didn't know how to cut this hair. She didn't know how to comb this hair. I remember being in tears because she'd use a regular comb on it. And, I mean, I remember just seeing a pile of hair on the floor because there was no grace. It was just like, I don't have time for this, so let's get through it, okay? So she never tried to cut it. So when she did cut it, she just buzzed it. And even when you buzz my hair, you gotta do it a certain way. Otherwise, it looks blotchy and there's spots everywhere. And I remember one time my mom cut my hair and my brother came home. He was at college. He came home. He's like, dude, what is up with your head? What did mom do to you? And I'm like, I don't know, man. This is what it always looks like. And he's like, dude, I'm gonna fix it. So he took a Bic razor and he shaved it clean. And then he had cut me in a bunch of spots that I didn't even know and then put aftershave on my head. And so I was in tears. I was bawling right before a baseball game. And yeah, so there was some obstacles, all right? Being like this and living where I was from. But yeah, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know. But no one was there to teach me about Like, my dad's side of things, my African-American side of things, I kind of felt, you guys ever watch, who watches This Is Us? You know, I remember Randall. Yeah. Randall always had problems, okay? But Randall didn't feel like he belonged because he was in an all-white family and no one, I mean, I don't know if you, it's weird how little Randall looks way different than the older Randall. He's a lot lighter than older Randall. I don't know what happened. I don't know how he got 10 shades darker in that time, but I always thought that was weird. And then little Randall is as dark as big Randall. So the middle Randall is just, he looks more like me, I guess. So, but yeah, I know it doesn't seem maybe like a lot, but these things start adding up and start piling up and it starts to have impact on you and who you are. Luckily when I was 11, I got to meet a couple that really took me under their wing. Like, we met them at some church service in St. Cloud, found out they lived in Brainerd. The mom, Leah, she was a biracialist, and she grew up in Pittsburgh. So she just knew more about this, that stuff, and they saw that I needed help. It's like, dude, you have no idea who you are. Let me show you how to comb your hair. Let me teach you how to dance a little bit better. Let's use some of the God-given gifts that he's put in you. So they really took me under. I remember I was telling Jane before service, I remember when I'd be out with them and people thought that I was their kid, I felt so good. Like, man, like these people, like this is where, like they look like me, like they're teaching me all this cool stuff. And yeah, I was envious of their little kids. Their little kids are like my brothers. But I was like, man, I wish I was a part of this family. And yeah, in a kind of sense, they adopted me in a sense. And so then just being up as a kid growing up, I was always asking my dad, right? So, dude, where's your dad? I never see him around. Why is he coming to games? And like any kid, my mom didn't tell me a lot about him. Like, a lot of things weren't positive, so she tended to avoid the subject a little bit. So, any kid, I started making stuff up. Like, I was really into Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, big buff dude. I started telling people, my dad's a bodybuilder, you know, or my dad's Kirby Puckett, or I make up ridiculous things until people started catching me in my lie, and then I felt embarrassed, so I stopped that eventually. So yeah, you see, you have that side of things. Like, man, like, I just want a dad. Like, everyone's asking me about a dad. I should have a dad. And then I found video games, some Mountain Dew, and some Twinkies. So I put on some weight. Okay. So I should have put a picture up there with me when I was like, you know, anywhere from, you know, fifth to ninth grade. This is my junior or my senior year, I think, back there, but. So yeah, then the fat jokes start pouring in. So people ask you why you look the way you do, why is your hair like that, why is the water run off it the way it does, and then hitting you with fat jokes. So again, really feeling out of place, feeling out of my environment. Then fast forward to sixth grade, I was a kid, like, I mean, it took a toll, so I do anything to fit in. Like, I wanted friends. I've always cherished relationships. Like, every time I met somebody that was close to me, like, I wanted to hold on to it. Still today, like, I like to stay connected with people, even if I met them 20 years ago. Like, I try to keep, whether it's a text or a call every once in a while, I try to keep those relationships close to me. And I'm guessing a lot of it stems back to just the past of being a kid. And I do feel like it's important to keep your relationships. They are important. Sixth grade, first time I smoked weed. So my given to me by my cousin, and I looked up to my cousin, loved my cousin. And he decided it was a good idea to give an 11-year-old some weed to smoke. So I started doing that. And that wasn't a huge issue at the time. It was just, I would do it anytime I was with him. It wasn't this huge vice over me. It wasn't affecting me in, I don't know, super negative ways at the time. Obviously, it can be negative, so, but it wasn't a vice yet. So at this time, but you start to learn to wear masks. And a lot of you guys that have been in the church, you hear about this. The idea of putting on a mask wherever you go, depending on what people you're with. And that's how I was. When I was at church, I was the best Christian kid you've ever found. You know, I knew how to speak Christianese. I know how to do it all, right? You know, hallelujah, praise the Lord, raise my hands, you know, knees at the altar, and then with my friends, you know, cussing, swearing, doing whatever, you know, doing all that stuff. So wearing masks everywhere I go, just to blend in. And then in eighth and ninth grade, it got a little bit more intense. My mom took me out of the school with all my friends and put me in a new school that I didn't know anybody. And now the school's in my town, but it might have been 10,000 miles away because I didn't really know anybody there. And the first people that I connected with were way worse than the friends that I was dealing with at my other school. But they're the ones that accepted me. I was a skateboarder. And of course, with that, you tend to... There's a stigma with those types of people. And in this case, it fit the description. Yeah, they weren't super great influence on me. I hated my mom for taking me out of that school. Like, I had so much anxiety about leaving and starting new. And like a lot of kids would, I think, at that age. But my mom, you know, even though I was getting worse, my behavior was getting worse, I was kept up to act with my mom. Because she was quick triggered to ground me. Anything. You're not going anywhere. You're done for a week. You're done for a month. I get 3 months. I get 4 months sometimes. For not doing anything like major. So I became a really good actor. Really good actor. And I became a really good hider of things. And I talked to my mom now, and she's like, "Are you serious? You did that? When did you ever do that?" Like, it's all this stuff. Like, I had no idea. But I'm like, "Mom, you kind of forced me to do that because we didn't talk about stuff. Like, you just grounded me. You just got angry and grounded me. So we never dealt with it. We never talked through the stuff. So, like anyone would, I figured a way around it. And I was good at manipulating. You know, if she grounded me, I'll go up to her friend, while our friends in the room, like, "Mom, I really love you. I'm really sorry for smoking those cigarettes in the garage. All right, Ben, go play with your friends." You know, like, you just learn to manipulate stuff. 10th grade, I decided I need to lose some weight for sports. I played baseball, football. I was a bowler, too. I know it's kind of funny. I was really into bowling. But that was really big in my family. My grandfather, my uncles, my brother, if you've ever bowled him, he has the funkiest bowling style. I think, yeah, he's fun. And I did that. I did Atkins diet, but that consisted of me going to McDonald's and buying quarter pounders and pounding those down. No bun. Ate a lot of quarter pounders, but it worked. I dropped some weight being active in sports. I trimmed out, as you can see. You know, this is me. I just won the dodgeball tournament at a youth group. So this is when Jarvis was there. It came down to sudden death, and it was me and another kid. And then you had the ball right here, and then the first person to hit the person win, and I got him. Zach Scogan. I took out Zach Scogan. Yep. You don't know who that is, but Jarvis knows who he is. Even up to the point, so 10th grade, Jarvis came when I was 11th grade. And at that point, I was still acting a fool. I was drinking, partying, smoking, doing all this stuff. And they became the one thing I was missing. So like Jarvis said, he came in. I would go to a youth group every once in a while with my friend, my best friend Kyle, the little one that you saw in the first picture, or the second picture. He'd always remind me. He was really involved. He was on the worship team. He was always the one that maintained like a really good like spiritual practice. He'd invite me over and he thought I was the heathen. Like, "Dude, what is wrong with you?" They're like, "I don't know, like, you got it easy, man. Like, it's hard for me out there." And so he invited me to church, and I would go because there's some cute girls there. There's some girls I liked. So I'm like, "All right, man, I'll hang out with you every once in a while." So I was coming maybe once a month at that time. And then I was there the night Jarvis first came and spoke. And we all kind of knew Doug, our mother church pastor. He was there, the youth pastor at the time. And we loved Doug because Doug let us do kind of whatever we wanted. Like, we kind of ran the show with Doug. Doug's still really fun. We love Doug. But Jarvis came in. He kind of laid down the hammer like, "Oh, man, who's this guy? Like, he's coming in." But he met me the first night he spoke. And I was at Applebee's because everyone went out to Applebee's afterwards. He came in, didn't know me. He sat down. He was like, "Hey, dude, tell me about you." I was like, "My name's Ben." He's like, "Dude, do you have any sports?" I said, "Yeah, I play baseball." He's like, "When do you play?" So I told him my next game. Like, "I play on Thursdays, 4 o'clock. He was at my game the next week. And him and his wife took me out for pizza afterwards. Rafferty's Pizza. If you've ever been to Brainerd. Great place. Grabbed it yesterday when I came back home. So they began to bond with me a little bit. Like, they, like, dude, why do these adults, like, why do they want to, like, take me out and hang out with me, spend time with me? So that relationship just continued to grow, and they loved me where I was at. They didn't have any idea all the crazy stuff that I was doing, because, again, great at wearing masks, great at acting. But they came in, loved me where I was at, and I probably had them fooled for a little bit of the relationship. Like, dude, I'm way worse than you think I am. I know you think I'm funny and whatever, but I'm doing some pretty dumb stuff. But the more I spent time with them, like you said, I just started hanging out with them a lot. I was at their house all the time. The more I wanted to be better. Like, seeing how Jarvis treated Jane and seeing how they interacted and seeing how much fun I had with them. Like, man, I can have so much fun. And they're doing things which I would consider the right way. I knew I was doing stupid stuff. I was never naive to what I was doing. But it's just what everyone else was doing. And it was easy. But Jarvis and Jane came in and made a huge difference. So I just started, first thing I dropped is I stopped drinking. Then I stopped smoking weed. And then I started serving more with Jarvis, like coming early, hanging out, and spending more time at the church, just in general. But yeah, those two were Jesus to me when I needed it. 11th grade, like the most important time. This is like when you are about to make serious life decisions. That's when people are starting to think about college, and this kid's thinking about college in 9th grade right now. I wasn't thinking about college. I never did good in school. Like, I was so distracted with everything else. Like, it was never something I thought about. But then being around Jarvis and Jane, it's like, man, like, what can I do? Like, what can I do with what I have? And I started to dream a little bit. They really encouraged me. Like, they spoke life into me. And the most important thing they taught me was how to love people, which a lot of you guys get to experience on a weekly basis. Any interaction with them, you know you're loved. You're accepted. You belong here. They helped me see the real me again. Because all those years of just piling stuff on and hiding and doing all that stuff, it got to be a lot. And yeah, I was like to crack jokes. I was always a class clown. I was always doing stuff to make people laugh. But still, I there's parts of me that I really wanted to express. But you're kind of weird. If I'm this big loving kid in school, I'm the weird kid. Like, why is he always hugging me? Why is he always doing this? You know, it's like all these, like, you know, like if you're around me, I'm a hugger. I like to hug people. Maybe because what they did to me, I don't know. But they helped me see me, and that me now is the one that my wife chose to be with, right? The one that's up here right now, able to share his story of all the crazy stuff that's happened. So when I said to talk about dreaming, after like just dealing with those guys, like dreaming about just doing ministry, getting close to God. After high school, I went to Master's Commission for 2 years. If you guys don't know what that is, it's a discipleship program where you just commit a year or two to your life just to serve God. Whether it's, you know, just really diving into memorizing scripture, I worked in the inner city in Phoenix, Arizona, so we do a lot of inner city work. I got to explore my dancing abilities. Like, I got to travel around the country doing school assemblies. It was amazing. And I got to be around a bunch of people going, like, all out for God. Not something I've ever got to experience in that way. And that it's super intense. Like, I learned a ton, and it did empower me in a lot of ways, because they do put you in some very uncomfortable situations, but you learn to get through them, and you see God work in them. So I did that. Of course, Jarvis and Jane drove me down there. They're the first ones to hop on board. Man, we're taking you down there. We believe in you, this dream that you want to do to pursue God and get closer to God. And then now, you know, just even at Masters, I'd come back in the summer. I would help serve Jarvis and Jane on Wednesday nights as a youth leader. And then I eventually moved to Hawaii a few years after that. get a call from Jarvis saying, hey man, we're planting a church. And I was on a plane a month later because, just like he tells you, and he's not lying, he did not know, they did not know anybody in this area when they came. And I figured if I could be anything of a, I don't know, of a help, of an encouragement, of just someone willing to serve in this, I mean, it's not easy starting a church. Like, a lot of them try to start and they fail. It's amazing what God has done through them in this community. I knew I had to be a part of it. Like I didn't have to think about it much. Like I just felt the spur in my spirit. Like I had to be here. And then in that process, like finding love for ministry again. Like now a pastor, now a youth pastor, now I get to share with you guys. Like it's crazy. Like I could have never guessed this is how it would end up. Going back to that Ben, 11th grade, dreadlocks. You can see at the top of my head right there that dread poking up. My best friend cut one of them off at summer camp. Just dumb. I was so mad. I followed him around the camp with the scissors. I was about to cut his hair off. Just a side note. It's a funny story. But like Jarvis saying, this is like, I don't know. If I'm going too long, Jarvis, you just cut me out, man. So I just, in Revelations, like Jarvis said, can you put that Revelation scripture at 12:11? The twelve. Yes. And they overcame him, that him is Satan, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for their love, not their lives, for they love not their lives, even unto death. And that verse before this, verse 10, it talks about how the enemy is the accuser of us. To God, day and night. Always telling him about what you're doing wrong, what you've done wrong, over and over again. So that's what it's saying. And then it says we overcame him by the blood. So it's Jesus' blood that washes away all of Satan's accusations over us. Right? I have a lot to be accused for. There's a lot of things that Satan probably could tell God that he's not even saying. Like, I have a long list of things that I deserve to be accused for. But it's God's, Jesus' blood that washes away all those accusations to mean nothing. It's just white noise to God right now. All that I've done. And then knowing and remembering the work that God's done in our life protects you from his deception. Because even he's accusing you to God and he's bringing those same things up in your head over and over again. He texts me all the time. I have different things I deal with now, but he still tries to bring up the old all the time, which a lot of you guys know. But Jesus' blood washes that away too. I was clearly a broken kid, but God had a plan in place to fix that brokenness. You can put those lyrics up. You guys ever heard this song? It's called Defender. It's like ultimate, like this is the bridge. It's like ultimate testimony lyrics. A lot about what I'm talking about today, just being broken. And it says, when I thought I lost me, so I shared about that, right? Like I lost who I was, all the mass. I got buried. He knew right where he left me. He knew right where I was. He knew the person I needed to become again. Or reignite. You reintroduced me to your love. And you picked up all my pieces. You put me back together. You are the defender of my heart. Listen to this song. I could break into tears every time I sing it. Because we are all broken. We all need fixing. Or we've needed fixing in something. And I want to end with this before Jarvis comes up. Change happened to me because I chose to trust God with my life, and I chose to trust the people God put in my life. So there's people in here that avoid, like Jarvis said, avoidance. You're avoiding people, you're avoiding encounters with people that could be extremely beneficial. And if you're in a place that you feel broken and you feel lost, the thing to do is not to run and to avoid people. The thing is to run to the people that you know can encourage you and bring life into you and speak life into you. So don't be that person. Don't give the enemy ammunition to accuse you over and over again, because if you isolate yourself, you're going to experience that. And if it wasn't for it, and I've talked about this in youth, like, we need godly mentors, we need godly people in our life to constantly encourage and bring life to us. If you don't have that, ask yourself, are you avoiding? Are you too nervous to deal with the hard facts at the time? Are you too nervous to deal with the mess that's right in front of you? Guys, I was broken. There's people in here that are broken. But us staff, we love you. We want God's best for you. And we want to be what Jarvis was to be. Like, we want to encourage you in the place that you're at right now. So don't avoid. Come, lay it down when it comes, you know, it's all the time. Don't avoid. Don't sit in your seat when you have opportunities like that to lay stuff down all the time. Take that, take advantage of that, because people don't get that. All right, guys, that's my story. That's what I leave with you today. I don't know, Jarvis, you want to come up?
Get the worship team up here. Yeah, put your computer down. You come up. I'm gonna have you come up here in a little bit. Just stay close, Ben. We're gonna. If you could put that last slide up there, the last one. It's interesting. I thought about this a few months ago. We're doing our story. I'm not much of a boxing guy. I'm not sure who he is, but who you guys are. But if you ever watched the Rocky movie, remember that part in Rocky IV when Rocky's facing a Russian and Apollo's getting beat up. He says, throw the towel in. And throw the towel means that you stop the fight. You stop the fight. And he knew the Russian was taking out Rocky, and his hand was up ready to throw it in. He didn't throw it in, and the guy passes away. Now listen, that's a terrible story. But the reason I say that is because we all have moments in our life that we're ready to throw the towel in. We all have moments in our life. I look at the story of Ben, even when he was, you know, saying 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, that you kind of feel like you're kind of giving up and you just want to throw the towel in. And listen, I'm here to tell you this morning, Ben was here to tell you this morning, don't avoid it and don't get to that point in life that you're ready to throw in the towel. I think some people just want to quit. Some people just want to quit on the Lord. My promise to you is this, listen, we may want to quit on the Lord, but he doesn't quit on you. Now, he is faithful. And if anything, here's what I want us to do this morning. Not say, I'm done fighting. Not just throw in the towel. But in our hearts, I want us to just take the towel. Just kind of as a sign of surrender, saying, I'm not going to throw it in. I'm not going to throw it in, but Lord, I'm going to give it to you. He's going to give it to you. I love that when Ben says it was the accuser that came because of their testimony. It's because of what Jesus did on the cross that covered that, that the lies that people have spoken to me, that you've spoken to me, the non-truths, the things that, listen, we all wear these masks. And I believe one sometimes what's holding us back from going deeper into our spiritual walk with the Lord is the mask that we wear that we're not willing to take off. Anything that you're overly sensitive about that you haven't given to the Lord is something you need to be healed of. Amen?